Blog Talk Radio.
And at that moment, you'll notice you're not as dead as you thought you were. And you'll realize there's nothing more effective for breaking you free than philosophy in action. And when your intent and your actions are in alignment, you can finally stop pointing fingers at everyone and everything else and harness the power within and commence your empowered life with a mindset that screams, I'm free.
Hi, this is Byron Katie.
Hi, this is Dr. John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Hi, this is Greg Braden.
Hi, this is Joan Borisenko. I'm author of Your Soul's Compass.
Hi, this is Dan Millman, author of Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Hi, this is James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy. You've tuned in to a radio show that can truly change your life. It's time to break free from the prison of your negative thoughts and release your greatest self. You're listening to Empowered Living with Steve Marabowie.
A Better Today welcomes you to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach, Steve Marabowie. In the next hour, Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to focus on your potential instead of your limitations. Here's your host, Steve Marabowie.
Welcome, welcome. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Marabowie. You know, we're so excited for today's show. You're listening to the most listened to internet talk radio show in the USA. I'm honored to be the host. It's really become a meeting place for today's great thinkers and communicators. Thank you so much, everybody, for spreading the word. Mitch Albom's going to be on in a minute. I'm really excited to have him on. You know his books. His books are absolutely amazing. Tuesdays with Maury, it was absolutely amazing. And where he's here to talk about his new book, Have a Little Faith. But first, of course, I want to say hello to the A Better Today community. Never stop doing what you're doing. Never forget the power of one. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. In this time, everyone's embracing their spirituality. I think it's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful thing. But remember, when doing so, don't turn your back on your humanity. There are people out there that need you. They need your love. They need your touch. They need your compassion. You know, and especially this holiday season, it's getting cold out. There's some people who need you. One of the most spiritual things you could do, folks, is embrace your humanity. And there's so much you can do out there. Something that doesn't have to cost you a penny. Some people just want your help. And thank you so much, A Better Today community, for doing it. Never forgetting that power of one. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. Keep doing what you're doing. Folks, I want to get to the show. We only have Mitch for a little while. Of course, Mitch Albom is an author, playwright, journalist, screenwriter who has written 6 books, including the international bestseller Tuesdays with Maury, the best-selling memoir of all time. His first 2 novels, The 5 People You Meet in Heaven and For One More Day, were instant number 1 New York Times bestsellers. All 3 books were made into acclaimed TV films. And Mitch, of course, a philanthropist, oversees 3 charities in Detroit. His new book, Have a Little Faith, Mitch offers a beautifully written story of a remarkable 8-year journey between 2 worlds, 2 men, 2 faiths, 2 communities that will inspire readers everywhere. As America struggles with hard times and people turn to their beliefs, Albom and the 2 men of God explore issues that perplex modern man. How to endure when difficult things happen. What heaven is. Intermarriage. Forgiveness. Doubting God. And the importance of faith in trying times. Although the text, prayers, and histories are different, Albom begins to recognize a striking unity between the 2 worlds and indeed between beliefs everywhere. Have a Little Faith is a book about life's purpose, about losing belief and finding it again, about the divine spark inside us all. It's one man's journey, but it's everyone's story. Exciting to have him on. Mitch Albom, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, congrats on all your success, and thank you for sharing your stories with us. So this story, for me, is fantastic because this is something, Mitch, that you always go through. You always go through these battles. I was inspired when I read Mother Teresa in her memoirs and how often she would battle this question of faith and what is God and is God listening. And it's really fantastic. Did you know you had another book in you?
Well, no. I mean, you always think that you're going to write books, but the best ones for me have been the ones that have happened by accident. And Tuesdays with Maury was one of those cases where I just happened to see an old professor of mine who was dying on television, and I got reconnected with him after 16 years, and it turned into a bunch of visits and turned into a book to try to pay his medical bills, and it turned into a little book that became a big book. And in this case, with Have a Little Faith, I also wasn't looking to write a book. I went back to the small hometown where I grew up in New Jersey and gave a little talk there, and afterwards a rabbi who I had known my entire life since I was a boy, I was now 82 years old, pulled me aside and said, "I'd like to ask you a favor." And I said, "Sure, anything." And he said, "I'd like you to do the eulogy at my funeral." And this really stunned me because I hadn't been religious in a number of years. And who was I to do a eulogy, you know, for the guy who does eulogies? And yet I didn't want to let him down. So even though I wasn't sure why he asked me, I said, "Well, I need to get to know you then as a man, you know, because most of us don't know our priests or pastors or rabbis any more than just sitting in the seats on Sunday or Saturday morning or whatever and listening." So that began what I thought would be a few weeks worth of visiting, or maybe a few months. It turned out to be 8 years. He lived till he was 90 through several strokes and battles and things like that, and became sort of the second education in faith, but on a much different level now, not necessarily on the in the sanctuary and listening to the prayers, but with a man of God, you know, on a daily basis, and driving around and talking and seeing him at home and seeing him at work, and doing the same not only with him but with the second person who you mentioned, this pastor here in Detroit where I live, who was quite the opposite, a guy who had been a thief and a drug addict and a drug dealer and incarcerated in his younger life and then gave his life to Jesus when he was 30 years old and thought he was going to be murdered by drug dealers one night, and said, "If you save me tonight, you can have me tomorrow." And he was saved, and he kept his promise. And 20 years later, he now runs this church for poor and impoverished people in Detroit that has, it's so poor it has this giant hole in its roof that they can't afford to fix. And rain and snow literally come in the winter months, and it's freezing cold. And yet he keeps plowing on and ministering. And I thought, wow, here's an African-American guy and a white guy. Here's a Christian and a Jew. Here's an inner city and a suburban, younger and older. And yet they're united by this very powerful thing called faith. And if those two could find a connection between the two of them, then all of us can probably find our own story on that line, and that's what the book became.
You know, and I'm curious about your own story. I mean, how did this shape? It seemed to me that you had that spiritual religious connection, and then kind of got lost in there. How did this shape your own views of exactly that, heaven and God and forgiveness,
right,
and belief? How did this shape your views?
Well, I think more than anything, it knocked the cynicism out of me. I think 10 years ago, I was very cynical about faith. I had been raised with it quite a bit, pretty extensively. You know, I was in a religious academy from the time I was 11 years old till the end of high school, and half the day was taught was just religion. So it wasn't like I didn't have an exposure to it, but then I think like a lot of people, I walked away from it. I was just apathetic. You know, I felt, well, I'm okay, and I'm doing all right, and my work is going well, and I'm healthy, and God can go his way, and I'll go my way. And so I went on like that for quite a while. And what happened over the years, I think I just sort of got cynical about it. I concentrated on the scandals, you know, church scandals or ethnic cleansing or all these bad things that are done under the guise of faith. And then when I started getting involved with this dying rabbi and with the struggling pastor, I got to see faith in, I don't know how to best put it, but maybe small ways, daily ways, instead of big picture hypocrisy. I was watching the pastor, for example, drive around these poor neighborhoods in Detroit in this old car with food on the trunk and hood of his car, loaves of bread and cheese and juice and hams and turkeys. And he would just drive through the poorest neighborhoods, and people would come out, they'd see him through the windows, and they'd come running out, and he would just feed them. I mean, what's more Christian than that? He was feeding the hungry people. No quid pro quo. Didn't, you know, nobody else was watching. Was doing it for headlines. Or I would see him on nights with the homeless slept in his church, 80, 90, 100 homeless men under blankets in a freezing cold church. And he would stay there 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, midnight, 1 in the morning, just sitting on a balcony looking down on them because he felt, well, this is my church and I need to take care of them. And those little sort of acts of faith, dozens, hundreds of them, seen by both this rabbi and this pastor, kind of knocked the cynicism out of me. And I realized it is a beautiful thing to lead a faithful life if you do it the way it's meant to be done. And so that's probably the single biggest change in every element.
You know, I'm so glad that you said that, Mitch. And folks, are you listening? Mitch, I've been on this kick lately where I'm saying I think the God that we've been praying to is deaf. Deaf to our words, but speak, it listens and can see our actions. And what you just said is really powerful, because you were saying it was the little things, and you went and mentioned actions. It was you're talking, saying, you know, the greatest sermons you've ever heard were done with a closed mouth and an open heart, you know, and people living that faith instead of just talking about it, living it. And that's really powerful. I'm glad that you said that.
Well, it's so true. You know, we do so much talking. It's so easy to talk. It's easy to be cynical in your talking. And let's be honest, it's easy to be faithful in your talking if you want to just come across that way. But to actually go do something, to watch this old rabbi in the middle of our conversation, 90 years of age, pick up the phone and dial with his little bony fingers and trying to read an old phone book and dialing a member of the congregation just to say, hey, I hope I'm going to see you this weekend in services. You know, remember, you're still part of the family and, you know, come in. He'd been retired for years. He wasn't getting paid for it, but he believed in the notion of a sacred community. You know, he believed in action. And so it was important for him to do, and that's a faithful act. Or even seeing here in Detroit where I live, we have 30% unemployment. I mean, one out of every three people out of work. And yet the one thing we don't have a shortage of at this church, despite the fact that there's no heat and that the snow comes in and that it's so poor and the walls are peeling and the floors are sagging, but we have no shortage of volunteers. Now think about that. Why would that be in the worst economy in 75 years? Because people come down and they scoop potatoes and they serve ice cream and they help pull the blankets out and they say, well, you know, I've been laid off, but I thought I had it bad, and I see that there are people who have it worse than me, and this reminds me, you know, to be grateful for what I have. And that's an act of faith, you know, to be grateful when times aren't so great, and to say, well, God's still given me a lot, and I thank God for that. This is, to me, anyhow, is much more significant than reciting a rote prayer. Not that prayers aren't important, but, you know, just saying, well, I put in my 1 hour a week at church, so, you know, I'm good. I think we have to live our actions, and you pointed it out very well.
You know, and is that what you get most out of this book? This book, and I want to point out, folks, that 10% of the profits from this book go to charity, including the Hole in the Roof Foundation, which helps refurbish places of worship that aid the homeless. Is that what you got out of this the most? Because I feel the connection, the religious connection, that connection to God really came through action for you in this book.
Yeah. Well, towards the end of the rabbi's life, he said something that was very profound that I've never stopped thinking about. We were talking about heaven, and he would like to sing all the time. He would always sing all his sentences, and so I was joking around with him about heaven, asking him a lot of questions. What does he think is going to happen? What's the first thing he's going to do when he gets there? And he looked to God and he said, dear Lord, this one has so many questions. Please give him many more years on earth, so when we see each other again, we'll have lots to talk about, you know, like that. And I said, well, do you really think we're going to see each other again? And he said, well, don't you? And I said, well, let's face it, I don't think I'm going where you're going. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, come on, I must have a special level for you. You know, you're a man of God. And he looked at me very sweetly, and he said, you're a man of God, too. Everyone is. And I've never stopped thinking about that, because for this 90-year-old, pious, righteous man to put himself on the same level as me, where I did not belong, I mean, I was none of those things, and yet he didn't care, because it was not only humble, but that's what faith was supposed to be about. Him to look at me and say, it's not to wag your finger and say, I'm more righteous than you are. It's not to wag your finger and say, my faith's better than your faith. It's to look at one another and say, you're a child of God too. Everyone is. And if we accept that everyone is, then we have to be nicer to one another, because we want to be nice to ourselves. We wouldn't kill ourselves. We wouldn't destroy ourselves. And if we accept that everybody is a child of God, then we wouldn't want to kill or destroy them either. We'd want to help them, no matter what level of faith, no matter how pious they were or weren't, we would see in them this piece of divinity. And that's what leads to action, Steve. I mean, when you recognize that, then you can't watch people, like in my city, you can't watch them starve and not want to feed them. You can't watch them not have a place to sleep and not help create a place to sleep. It's just, that's the least that you would do for the least of us, to not to be too biblical about it, and you're inspired by that if you think of yourself and them as the same. If you start to think, well, I'm better than they are, so they, you know, I deserve what I have, or they're not as righteous as me, so they deserve to be left in the streets, or that's a different faith than me, so who cares if they go to hell, you know. You can't have that kind of attitude if you really believe that everyone's a child of God, so it sort of starts from that.
It's really powerful because you find that although these two men were different as far as socioeconomic and racial barriers, it's kind of like, I guess to use this, it's kind of like God still put the same song in their heart.
That's correct. That's very correct. And I kind of make a reference to that. I think, you know, God sings like the rabbi used to sing, and we all hum along. And there are a lot of melodies, but it's one song. And if you can kind of think like that, you look at the world as a place of possibility instead of a world, instead of a place where you have to be angry or fearful of other people.
And it's so true, and you can go about, and what you said, and I know we have a limited amount of time with you, but what you said was so true, Mitch. If we could just see each other as the same, as God's children, you wouldn't hurt yourself. You wouldn't poison yourself. And if you can be inspired by that and take action, not just have all these committee meetings, but actually take action on it,
right,
we can really begin to make an impact.
I'll give you a small example of that, Steve. The pastor, you know, it's one thing to be saved yourself, but it's another thing to show that grace to somebody else. And the pastor, you know, as I say, he was a pretty bad guy the first 30 years of his life. He said, I broke pretty much all 10 of the 10 commandments. But when he was 30, you know, on this night, he thought he was going to be murdered. He was on the ground with a shotgun behind a row of trash cans lying in front of his apartment, sure that these drug dealers were going to come down the street, blow him away and his family away and everything. And that's when he said, Jesus, if you get me out of this, you can have me in the morning. Okay, he got out of it. And okay, he turned his life around. And okay, things got not richer for him, because he actually had earned more money as a drug dealer than he ever earned as a pastor. But things had turned around for him that way. Okay, it would be enough for him to say, you know, I did what I needed to do. You know, I turned my own life around. But he didn't stop there. When he was feeding the homeless in Detroit, he came upon this crack addict, much like him at one point. And this guy had lost a leg, and he was homeless, and he was squatting in this apartment, and he offered him some work unloading the food trucks from the food bank, you know, a couple bucks. Well, this guy, you know, being a typical drug addict, he took the job, and he immediately developed his own distribution system. It was one for the church, two for him, one for the church, two for him. And he would steal these turkeys and hams, and he would sell them to feed his drug habit. Now, Pastor Henry could have said, well, that's it, I gave him a chance, forget this guy. But he didn't. He stayed with him. And one night, the guy was flooded out of his apartment when somebody stole the pipes from under his sink, and it washed him away, literally, where he was squatting as a homeless guy. And he came to the pastor all soaking wet, and he said, well, I don't have any more clothes. You know, these are the only clothes I have, so I can't work for you today. I don't have any place. And the pastor said, well, where will you live? And he said, well, I don't know. I don't have any place to live now. And the pastor said, why don't you live with me? And he moved him into his home that night, with his wife and his three children living upstairs. He moved them into the one room that they had of this tiny little house that they lived in, and let him sleep there and live there, not for a night and not for a week, but for a year. A year. A total stranger, virtually. They moved him in, and do you know that today that man is not only clean and sober, has been for years, but he's also an elder of the church. And he married a woman from the church, and they have a beautiful little girl. And he'll be the first to tell you that it was that kindness that saved his life. Now, that's taking your own life being turned around and not just saying, well, I'm behaving well enough now, so I'm good, but then doing it for somebody else, someone who reminds you of the way you might have once been. And that's action, you know. That's putting yourself out there when you move someone into your own home. It's not saying, oh, the poor homeless, here's $5.
Right.
It's saying, I'm going to open my doors to someone and see if I can help them, and he did.
You know, it's incredible because, you know, you look through history and you recognize that sometimes bad people make the best good people, you know, because they're so committed to whichever they choose. New Testament,
right,
Christianity, we understand, right, the development of the church because of the Apostle Paul, but when Jesus was alive, the Apostle Paul was a murderer. He was a terrorist to the church. He'd kill people who followed what Jesus did.
Right.
But God,
right,
chose them, you know, and
it's funny that you bring up Paul, because one of the first sermons that I heard Pastor Henry give was about Paul, and he was talking about trapping people in the past. And he was saying, you know, some people refuse to see you that you could change. And he was pointing out how people said, well, Paul had his change, you know, and was suddenly supporting Jesus and talking about it. And people were saying, well, this can't be the same Paul. Come on, you know, we remember him when he was doing all those bad things. And the pastor was likening it to his own life. He said, you know, whenever I go back to New York, where I grew up, you know, and where I did all my bad things, people go, oh, come on, you're not pastor now, you know. It's a game. It's a gimmick. Everybody wants to trap you in your past. And I realized that I had been doing that to some degree to him as well. You know, I was a little distrustful of him when I first met him because I said, well, come on, he was in jail, you know. I mean, don't you get disqualified from the pulpit at some point, you know. And yet, when I finally spent enough time with him, I realized, no, it is possible for people to change. And we do have to believe, like with Paul, that, you know, things can turn around and you can be as pure of heart in your goodness as you were as evil of heart in your badness. That's a leap of faith, you know, to be able to do that. But that's why we have to be able to look at one another and see through where we might be right now and look at where we might be tomorrow.
Amen, sir. Folks, don't let your history interfere with your destiny. In Mitch Albom's new book, Have a Little Faith, he offers a beautifully written story of a remarkable 8-year journey between two worlds, two men, two faiths, two communities that will inspire readers everywhere. Remember, it's not about one man's journey. It's everyone's story. Mitch, this was super quick, but I know you're super busy, and thank you so much for sharing your stories, and congrats on the new book. I'm sure it's going to be another grand slam.
Thank you, Steve. Nice talking with you.
Folks, make sure you check out the new book, Have a Little Faith by Mitch Albom. It's about life's purpose, about losing belief, finding it again, about the divine spark in us all. And you can tell Mitch is the real deal. Mitch is definitely the real deal. His last books were just bestsellers for years and years. So make sure you check out the book, Have a Little Faith by Mitch Albom. Again, Have a Little Faith by Mitch Albom. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with some feedback. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. We'll be right back.
A Better Today, the Empowerment Company, is the proud sponsor of Empowered Living, dedicated to the empowerment of humanity. A Better Today continues to expand its arsenal of powerful tools that are designed to empower individuals, groups, and communities. Led by its president, Steve Maraboli, and backed by a community of people across the globe, A Better Today has empowerment programs running in over 35 countries. For more information on A Better Today, its charities, programs, and events by Steve Maraboli, please visit abettertoday.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our popular free newsletter. That's abettertoday.com.
Hi, this is Kenny Chesney for RAV. There are a lot of things we have no control of in life, but that doesn't include drunk driving. Be smart. If you drink, don't drive. Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? I'm Andrew Hoffman. I invented the Lost Cat Magnet. Just turn it on and Lost Cat stick to it. Just listen to one satisfied cat. That's proof. You should invent stuff too. But remember, don't do a Lost Cat Magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Byron Katie, and you're listening to Empowered Living with Steve Maraboli.
look at the day and the hours ahead, and before I move forward, I bowed my head and said, thank you. Oh, I said, thank you. What if I looked at my life in a different way? Took a little more time to stop and pray. I know it would change all the moments in between. So here I go. Thank you for everything. Thank you for loving me. It don't even matter what tomorrow brings. Well, I will sing my thank you for sun and rain, for what you give and take away.
Welcome back. You're listening to Empowered Living Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. For more information about A Better Today, our speeches, our programs, seminars, charity events, live event schedule, our newsletter, anything you want to know, make sure you check out abettertoday.com. That's abettertoday.com. And, of course, our corporate information is at stevemaraboli.com. And for every show we have ever done, every interview, every discussion, every online seminar, close to 300 hours of radio. Make sure you check out empoweredlivingradio.com. That's empoweredlivingradio.com. You can participate with this show through instant feedback either on our website, empoweredlivingradio.com, or if you have AOL, we are ABT Radio Show. That's one word, ABT Radio Show. Just tell us who you are, where you're from, and feel free to send a comment or a question over to us. That's the way we interact on this show. How great was that? I know we only had him for about 20 minutes, but he's doing the speaking circuit. He's doing Oprah and Ellen and CNN and NBC and all that. And how awesome is it that major publishing companies are now also considering us in that major media circuit? So an applause to Empowered Living Radio, who's starting to step up there with the big dogs. We're getting noticed. And it's pretty cool because we have never – ever advertised this show, ever. You won't find this show advertised anywhere because we really believe that good deeds and doing good things are its own advertisement. And when you do that, you expand. You expand in a natural way. You expand, you know, word of mouth and people who love and trust you hear you talk about this show, and they're in. It's much better than just plastering it somewhere for people to see and not understand. So congrats to all of you. Congrats to us. Today we celebrate our Big Dog Day because we just had on Mitch Albom, and who's one of the best-selling authors in the entire world. So thank you all very much. His website is mitchalbom.com. That's mitchalbom.com, mitchalbom.com. And his new book is Have a Little Faith. And in this book, of course, he offers a beautifully written story of a remarkable 8-year journey between two worlds, two men, two faiths, two communities that will inspire readers everywhere. It's about life's purpose, about losing belief, finding it again, and about the divine spark in us all. It is one man's journey, but it is everyone's story. Make sure you check out Have a Little Faith. His website, Mitch Albom, is mitchalbom, mitchalbom.com. So it is actually everyone's story. I know this is my story, and this is so many of you as well who experience it in different ways. You know, it's funny how when you do start participating, we talk about this endlessly on this show about doing something different today and awakening to something different and shaking things up. I think there, my Facebook status today had something to do with shaking things up. And you do something different to enliven, to ignite that fire within, to do so, to participate. I always say embrace your spirituality, but don't turn your back on your humanity. Participate, participate, participate. God is deaf. He doesn't hear what you're saying. He only sees what you're doing. And you got to remember this. You got to remember this. And as we go through life and you start recognizing other people's faith, not the differences, but the commonality, you know, as someone who goes through a natural disaster here in, let's say, in Florida, and someone who goes through it in China, they're praying to a different God. They're praying to different beliefs. They're saying different sanctioned prayers. But it's that same sense, it's that same feeling that's going to get both of them through. And I think that maybe we can start embracing this a little bit. Maybe we can start embracing this a little bit, where you can start respecting, instead of judging, respecting other people's opinions. Because what I find that Mitch did in this book, what he isn't so much telling the story about it, he's telling the story through his eyes, and how he was really reluctant. He was a skeptic. But because it was a rabbi that he had known for years, he was respectful. And in these conversations, early skepticism, he'd listen respectfully, and he'd start learning. It was that little bit of respect that opened the door to learning. And it's not necessarily like that the rabbi or the other preacher converted him, because Mitch still ended up with his own version of God and what he believes. But he respected. And because he respected, that respect, instead of acting as, instead of being disrespect and acting like poison and acting like fuel to a hatred fire, instead of that, that respect actually nourished him and helped him evolve spiritually, helped his understanding of greater things than him. Help that grow and flourish. That's really powerful. That's really powerful, because in today's world where action, for me, action speaks. I don't want to hear anything anyone says. All I hear is people who have amazing things to say, but they don't do anything. I don't want to see, or I don't want to hear that. I want to see you doing something. I believe that people should be so dedicated to what they think, so dedicated to their intent, that their actions should speak so loudly that nobody has to ask them what they want. You could just watch them for a day and know what they want. I believe in those kind of people. I love hanging out with those kind of people, people who you don't have to ask them anything. You don't have to ask them questions about their feelings. You can just see by their actions. You can just see by their actions what they're dedicated to. And I think that's where we could be if we open ourselves up to respecting others' opinions. We don't have to waste our time arguing with them about the details of their faith. Instead, respecting that they have a faith that's similar to yours, even though the story isn't similar, the faith is similar. Even though the story isn't identical and the characters have different names and maybe it takes place in a different location or in a different time, it doesn't matter. The faith is still the same. It's still a faith in something greater than them that is watching, that is protecting, that needs to be respected, that needs to be honored and cherished. And it is that faith that if you have respect for, it doesn't necessarily convert you, but your freedom from the arguing of it helps you grow and expand and flourish. So Mitch writes about his journey. What about your journey? What I find interesting about this, and Mitch, I wish we could have had him for longer, folks, but he has a crazy schedule, and the fact that he even fit us in is fantastic, and I'm really grateful for it. But you know, what I found interesting is Mitch said he had gone on to this point in his life. He grew up in religious teaching and religious structure, and he had even gone to a religious school. He grew up in a very religious family. But then somewhere in there, he became a little skeptical. Cynical, I think, is the word he used. He became cynical of the whole thing with the scandals. He got involved in the story. and he got cynical of it. And I bet what he wasn't able to mention, but I'm willing to bet that during that cynicism, you surround yourself with people for that environment, right? We've talked about this. And what needed to change in order for him to expand and give us this amazing new book? What needed to change? The introduction to two new people. Two new people were in his mix now. Two new people were in his environment now. And suddenly when I tell you, you start becoming a product of your environment. Those two new people in his environment and his days, he was saying that one of the most powerful things you could do, you think that someone is a great speaker, especially in a spiritual sense. If you think they're a great speaker, you might learn from them while they're giving speeches and sermons, but I'm telling you, it's nothing like what you learn from them from just hanging out with them. That's when you learn the most, just watching how they live, how they respond to other people, what they say. Well, not when they're sitting in front of a big audience, but when they're eating at the table. That's when you learn the most from those type of leaders. And Mitch found himself with these two new people in his environment, feeding his mind, nourishing his soul. And he was reconnecting with something that his old environment didn't allow him to connect to. There's good news and bad news with this. Had it been the other way in your own life, the people you're surrounded with, this are the people who are going to keep you where you're at. If you want something different, you got to start putting new people in your environment. That's the good news and the bad news, because if you're putting negative people in your environment, it'll bring you the other way. That's a side note. But in this story, Mitch has two people now, a rabbi and a pastor. Two different socioeconomic differences, racial differences. The rabbi has plenty of money and has lived a very blessed life, and the pastor is a reformed drug dealer and a convict who now preaches to the poor and the homeless in a decaying church with a hole in its roof. We're talking about totally different situations, but a similar song in their heart. And what Mitch was doing in this story is hearing the song. His heart was hearing the song that their hearts were singing. And as Mitch so eloquently stated, his heart began to hum along. It began to hum along to this song that God had put in their hearts. And it's powerful for me because that what Mitch is writing validates everything we talk about every single week. It validates a call to action. Mitch said, what woke me up was seeing these two people. He didn't say anything about what they said until later. He said, at first, what brought me to this was watching them give turkeys out to people who are hungry, watching them give food to the homeless, shelter to the homeless, watching their actions. Folks, I'm telling you, it is actions that's taking us to the next level. We have been filled with philosophers. There's talent, there's tons of books. Go to the philosophy section. Go to the self-help and spiritual section of your bookstore. Those sections are taking over the whole bookstore. Folks, we got philosophers. We got that. You could check that off our list. We got philosophers. We need action. We need action. We need to stop talking the beauty and start living the beauty. We need action. Action. How much action is in your life? How much action is in your life? You're listening to this show and you're feeling fantastic. You're reading these amazing books and you're feeling so spiritual. How much action is in your life? Can people tell that you've been moved spiritually? Can they? Or is your spirituality only within you and not visible to an outside eye? And that's where we're at. This is what's transforming lives. It is that reflection of spirituality that's reflecting, not only shining so brightly within you, but shining outwardly for others to see. It doesn't just come through your eyes in this beautiful ray of sunshine. It shines through in actions. It shines through in the saying of I love you and the showing of I love you. It shines through in the saying I'm sorry and the showing I'm sorry. It shines through in the saying I care and the living and showing that I care. It shines through with those actions. That's when it happens. And it's so, so powerful when you see that kind of sermon delivered with a closed mouth and an open heart. When you see a sermon delivered with action, that moves people. Dr. King gave some killer speeches, but you know what moved people? When they were walking arm in arm across the bridge, facing dogs that were about to bite them, facing water cannons that were about to shoot them, that kind of action inspires people. The boycott, where they were going to walk for one day, they ended up walking for over 1 year. That kind of action inspires people. The words are fantastic. The words are great nutrients for the actions that you take after. Start taking action today, folks. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. We'll be right back.
A renowned speaker, author, and personal coach, Steve Maraboli has risen to international prominence by delivering highly penetrating speeches and effective programs that have helped propel corporations, executives, professionals, and organizations to great levels of success and excellence. Packed with timeless wisdom and effective strategies, Steve's speeches and coaching programs have been featured in Fortune Magazine, Reader's Digest, New York Times, LA Times, and Psychology Today. Steve Maraboli has been considered the secret weapon behind many great success stories. Now it's your turn. Visit SteveMaraboli.com. Align with success and excellence today. SteveMaraboli.com.
Hi, this is Mark Anthony Farad, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. So choose a designated driver. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
How I long to hear you sing beneath the clear blue sky.
Hi, this is Steve Maraboli. Do you need a little motivation, a little inspiration? I'd like to share with you my favorite website, motivateus.com. I've been visiting the site for many years whenever I need a motivational or inspirational pick-me-up. MotivateUs.com is packed with thousands of positive quotes, stories, and poems. For over 10 years, Marlene Blasek has been regularly updating the site with submissions from listeners just like you. Visitors are invited to share their best thoughts and stories to help encourage others. Why not visit the site and see for yourself? That's MotivateUs.com. And tell Marlene Steve sent you.
I'm Sarah Evans with a message from the American Red Cross. Did you know that the Red Cross provides service to members of the military, veterans, and their families? From communicating emergency messages in times of crisis, to outreach to the National Guard and Reserve, to veterans assistance and military hospital visits, the Red Cross is there for men and women in the armed forces across the country and around the world. Visit www.redcross.org or contact your local American Red Cross chapter.
Ready to participate in an effective advertising campaign? Internet radio continues to gain popularity as its audience has grown larger than many terrestrial radio programs. It's the perfect platform to reach your target audience. Empowered Living with Steve Maraboli is heard live by thousands of people all across the nation and downloaded on iTunes by thousands more. If you would like to support this program and advertise to our large national audience, please call A Better Today at 800-445-0921. That's 800-445-0921.
This is Dominic Elvis, author of The Four Agreements, speaking for Empowered Living with Steve Maraboli.
Right now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. For more information about Better Today, our speeches, our programs, our seminars, make sure you check out bettertoday.com, stevemaraboli.com. And, of course, every show we have ever done is available 100% free. Make sure you check out empoweredlivingradio.com. That's empoweredlivingradio.com. And you can download everything 100% free. Feedback today, well, Instant Messenger, the screen name is ABT Radio Show. That's one word, ABT Radio Show. And, of course, through empoweredlivingradio.com, you could feedback through there as well if you don't have access to AOL, for instance. We just got one during the break from Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, where they're having trouble with AOL. So they feedback to there, and this one comes from Olivia Van Musen. Olivia Van Musen writes, Steve, excellent show. I heard you mention that God was deaf. I'm sorry. I listen when I can, but I haven't heard you say that before. Can you please elaborate on that concept? Thank you in advance, and thank you for the work you do for the military. Hey, thank you. Thank you over at Ramstein. I've talked about this before. I don't know how deep I've gotten into this before, but it's just something that I'm recognizing now. I guess it's not something I'm recognizing now as much as it is something that I'm putting to words now. I understand it enough to put it to words. And what I mean by this, Olivia, is that we, what happens? We have to. I have kind of a scientific thinking mind. What happens if God's always listening, Olivia? Every one says, "Oh, God's always listening. Just say your prayers, and God's listening." And I believe this. But if God's always listening, since the beginning of time, people have been praying for peace, yet there's been war. Since the beginning of time, all poor people and hungry people have been praying for food, but there's been poor and hungry people. You'll never convince me that there's someone starving right now that isn't praying to not be starving. And on a lighter side, there isn't someone who's living paycheck to paycheck that isn't praying to not be living paycheck to paycheck. There isn't someone who's got a kid who's sick who isn't praying for their kid not to be, but there's kids sick. You know, so I keep thinking this, and it's easy to say simple things like, hey, you know, God hears your prayers, but sometimes the answer is no. And that's poetic, but that doesn't do shit for me. So I need to start thinking about this, and I would think about this, Olivia. I would think about this. And I would look back, and I always go back, and I go back into religious texts often and historic texts often to just see what I'm reading about. And I started noticing something. I started noticing Jesus starts saying, you know, hey, listen, if you want success in your life, and he didn't say it this way, but it's what he was saying. If you want success in your life, if you want to have your prayers answered, in essence, Jesus said, pray and ask for something, and then act as if you've already received it, and you'll be given whatever you ask. So I hear that, and then Jesus on another occasion would say, you know, if you want something, ask and it'll be given, seek and ye shall find, knock and the door will be open. Ask, seek, knock. So I start thinking to myself, those are all verbs. Ask, seek, knock, those are verbs, those are actions, there's no words in there. And when Jesus said pray and ask for something, he was saying pray and ask for it, but then he said, and then act as if. So the key component to that success was the acting, not the asking. So I started looking through the history books, and I started seeing and reading, whether it was Gandhi, Mother Teresa, or Dr. King, who all had really eloquent and powerful things to say, but really the movement of what they did were the actions they took. What really changed anything was the action they took and what their words were used for. They didn't say those words so that we could put it in a quote book one day. What they were actually using those words for, and I realized it was what I use my words for, it wasn't to sound so eloquent, but instead to inspire people to take action. And I started noticing this pattern, Olivia, and I said, wait a second. There's a whole lot of action going on here. And look, all these people were praying and praying and praying in this situation and that situation. And what was required of them wasn't the prayer. It was the action. So thinking about this, I recognize that the God that you pray to hears your prayers. And this is what Jesus was saying. It took me forever to understand this. He hears your prayers, but not with your words. He doesn't hear your words because, you know what? Let's be honest. So often our words contradict our actions. We say certain things, but we don't live them. And that gets past you and me. You know, we get relationship drama and friendship drama and coworker drama because of that. But you're not going to fool a God. God doesn't have time for that kind of drama. God just says, you know what? Show me. And throughout history, as I look through the history books, as I look through the religious texts, I noticed it was a God who was saying, show me. It wasn't a God that was saying, tell me. It was a God who was saying, show me. Somewhere in our religious upbringing, we're taught, tell me. But God never said that. God said, show me. And I'm just coming to understand that well enough to explain it to all of you, that the success I've had in my own life, the quote-unquote miracles that I've had in my own life, were miracles and successes of actions, not of philosophy and discussion, but of actions. So what I say now, Olivia, is the God we've been praying to all along is deaf to our words. He doesn't hear our words. He doesn't want to hear our words. He wants to see what we say with our actions. So if you want peace, you can pray all you want, but like Jesus said, when you pray and ask for something, then act like you have peace. If you want peace, be peace. Act as if there is peace. Act as if violence is ridiculous. Act as if, you know, racism is ridiculous. Act as if poverty is ridiculous. You start acting as if, and you create that reality. Imagine if everyone who is praying for peace started acting as if violence was ridiculous and just completely off the table. Oh, how different would things be? How different would things be if people were to act out their prayers? How different would things be if people were to act out their prayers? So, I say that God is deaf for that reason. Because he's not listening to our BS. Saying, oh, God, please do something. God's saying, listen, I sent you, and you're amazing. Not only I send you, but I created you to be amazing. You are more resilient than anything out there. You have the ability to adapt, to regenerate, to reproduce yourself, like nothing else out there. Go do something. Stop asking me to do something. I did my part. I sent you. You do something. You show me you want something done, not by asking and begging for it. You show me you want something done by doing it. And once you're doing it, believe me, I'll push you along. Once you're moving, I'll push you along. Once you started in this race, I'll push you along. I'll make sure the wind blows at your back. Believe me, I'm God. I got your back. But show me. Don't tell me. I don't want to hear your shit anymore. Show me. What if we were to start living that way? And that's what I mean. And when Mitch when Mitch was talking about this, it really struck with me. And if he was still on, he would be probably saying the same things. But this is what I've noticed. What I've noticed in life is that it's the doers that impact in any way, evil or good. It's the doers that impact. And if your life is not where you want it to be, and it's in a negative place, and you're wondering why, and you're perplexed, and in your mind you're frustrated, you're sad, and you're a little cynical of this God now, I'm going to tell you what happened. You may not like it. It may not be popular, but I'm going to tell you as your brother who loves you what happened. If your mind is in a positive place, but your life isn't, it's because the truth is that your doing outweighs your thinking. And maybe your thinking can be in the positive all at once, but if your doing isn't there with it, then neither will your life be. And if you're in a spot where you know, oh, I'm such a positive thinker, and I have my intents and my vision boards, but it's not, my life isn't where I want it to be, it's because your doing outweighs your thinking, and it always will. There's no abused woman out there that doesn't think that she wants to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't abuse her, but she doesn't leave. And she stays in that situation. Her doing is outweighing her thinking. Oh, and you could throw in a million reasons why, and you could say, oh, but poor her. You could say that. I'm not saying that any of that isn't true. What I'm telling you is a fact, a very human fact, that her doing is outweighing her thinking. The same is happening to you when you say, oh, I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck, but you keep going to the same job, and you're not educating yourself more, or you're not making yourself more qualified for a different job, or you're not looking for a second job really quick to earn a couple extra bucks before Christmas. You're not doing any of that because you feel a sense of entitlement where you shouldn't have to do any of that, and you're miserable, and you're not miserable for any other reason than your doing is outweighing your thinking. Folks, we got to know this. We got to be honest about this. And this is what I learned. And this is what I'm sharing with you. And I'm not sharing it with you for any other reason than I want you to understand that when you do as you think, then your life will be as you are. And that's the truth of it. That if you're, no matter what you're feeling, if you're feeling that you need to lose weight and you're not happy with your weight and you're miserable at the weight you're at, but you can't seem to drop these pounds because your doing is outweighing your thinking. And there's more you can do. There's something you can do. And I understand there's a million excuses and it's unfair and there's a million things that we want to say to each other, and that's for a different type of show. I'm talking about the blatant truth now. If you have a million and one plans for what you want to do and things that you have in the works and businesses you're going to start and all these plans and nothing happens and you're saying, wow, I can't seem to get motivated to do, and you start worrying about all this thing, believe me, nothing will happen until you start doing. You could have a million plans, but nothing will happen until you start doing. I've mentioned the four pillars of success on this a million times. It doesn't sound as spiritual, because the four pillars of success is something I created for businesses when I was taking over the business consulting world. The four pillars of success works, and I use it with my personal clients. A lot of today's champions and athletes and performers use the four pillars of success, and people celebrate them every day and say, oh, look, they're so lucky, and look how blessed they are. Why couldn't I? And they shoot it right on themselves of why they couldn't be. And what they don't realize is that while you're sleeping and while you're complaining, these people are following these four pillars, and they're doing it, not just thinking it. The four pillars of success are intent, action, right? Intent, vision, action, and clarity. So when you have your intent and you know what you specifically want, you have your vision, you visualize it, you can close your eyes, you can see it, you can breathe it, you can smell it. You have your intent and your vision. That's what most people have. I know what I want, Steve, and I can see myself doing it, but then they forget to take action. Now you got to do it. It's easy to plan it. Now you got to do it. It's easy to say. Now you got to do. And when you're doing, you maintain clarity by that plan you made, by that plan on paper that you made. Those four pillars will always work. And guess what? When you don't use one of them, it'll always fail. We have to come to terms with this. We have to come to terms with the fact that the reason we don't have peace in the world is because our actions are outweighing our intent. That's why. Because as soon as our actions demand peace, that's when there'll be peace. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have another great guest for us today. We'll be joined by John English. He wrote a fantastic book, The Little Book on Relationship, How to Guide Your Life with Meaning, Purpose, and Power. I hope you all really enjoyed our conversation with Mitch Albom. His book is Have a Little Faith. Make sure you check out MitchAlbom.com. That's MitchAlbom.com. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. I'll tell you what, we're going to probably split the show into two. So we're going to start up with the opener of the show again. We'll split it into two so people can download either show today, either the